We see the TV as being the fireplace of this millennia. You know, it's still that thing in that we have in the house that brings people together around it for specific events.
What is the future of TV? This is Future Lab, the online radio series of Intel Labs. I'm Jason Lopez. The internet seemed like a threat to TV until television ratings started to show that more people watched more TV for longer periods than ever before.
This week will long be remembered in the annals of television. For on Thursday, December 17th, the Federal Communications Commission approved compatible color television, a great victory for RCA, which pioneered the system, and an even greater victory for the American public.
Technological advances like color have always been exciting for consumers of media. It's easy to think of TV in terms of the picture quality or how many channels you can get. The latest development, video on the web, had many Web 2.0 proponents in Silicon Valley back in 2005 predicting things like TV is dead, or that everything ever created would soon be digitized and available on the internet. Granted, these were the views of people with an interest in the success of internet-based media. It turns out, 5 years later, that TV is as robust as ever, and not everything ever made is available on the internet. But these technologists did recognize one thing. They recognized the possibilities.
Ubiquitous TV really begins to think about television as living on all of our devices.
Brian David Johnson is a futurist at Intel who's developing a vision for computing in the year 2020. He's also the author of Screen Future, The Future of Entertainment, Computing, and the Devices We Love.
It's not really about the television on your wall or your PC screen or your smartphone screen. It's about all the screens and about having an entertainment experience that moves across all of those screens and having kind of the freedom of it moving. And then also having those screens work together if you're in the same room. So if you have your big flat screen on the wall and you have your smartphone, they could actually work together to give you a better television experience. So it becomes about the seamless experience.
Infrastructure might be a starting point toward articulating a future of TV. There's probably no one trying harder to understand what devices we'll be watching TV on than the retailers who sell them. Gary Wilhouse is the head of social media for Harvey Norman, Australia's biggest retailer of consumer electronics.
We've got that big screen up on the wall, we've got the little screen in our pocket, and then we've got the medium-sized screen, which is either our tablet or our laptop, that I would struggle to think that there's a device that we don't have. It's where does our content come from?
And so the plot thickens, because TV is made up of many more elements than just technology.
For me, it's not.
Henry Jenkins is a media scholar at the University of Southern California and a public intellectual who looks at the way everyday people relate to media.
Television is many technologies now, but I also think the technology is following good storytelling and compelling content and deep audience engagement. And the audience will ultimately decide what the technologies of television are, just as they have in the past, that we've seen failed attempts to court the audience, we've seen successful attempts.
Professor Jenkins is quick to point out that although technology improvements like color or cable TV or high definition have helped to add to the TV watching experience, the cornerstone to understanding television starts with the viewer.
If you built television and no one watched it, you know, does it make a sound? To me, you start with the audience, you start with what drives people's passions to television. And what we often see is the audience reaches ahead of the technological development. The industry may respond to disruptive technologies. Some segment of the audience is already there, already pushing for that. And so for me, it starts with the audience.
One thing that the explosion of user-generated content did not do, it did not convince people to abandon the desire for well-told stories in favor of unstructured raw footage. But the open channels on the web have given content makers a way to distribute outside of traditional networks.
The broadcast paradigm is breaking down. So how does the money flow? And is it going to flow through creating larger and larger aggregates of eyeballs? Or is it going to grow by engaging much more actively quality audiences who are niche in scale? If the latter, then how do you lower the cost of production and distribution so that you can fully engage and successfully court the support of a fan base that will give you the money you need to stay into production?
Jenkins does not suggest that the quality of TV programs must diminish in order to cover costs. New business models require producers to develop new practices.
A lot of my ideas, from viewer-supported television to, you know, sort of allowing fans to identify global content and making that content available to them, puts more of the decision-making power in the hands of the audience. But from the business side, what it means is getting an audience that is deeply committed, that has high loyalty, high awareness, and letting that community spread the word and evangelize for the media property that you're creating. And this is the essence of what we call spreadable media.
Spreadable media is a description of what's possible when TV becomes more than just a one-way conduit from the producer to the viewer. What happens when that conduit is two-way? And even more, what happens when viewers can connect with each other?
The thing that we always have to remember about people is that we are inherently social. So if you give people a device that they can communicate with, they're going to communicate with their friends and family. And if we can use television as a way for people to be social, I think that becomes really interesting, because television is such a beloved experience. It's such a, at the center of our lives. You bring up some interesting questions. How are we social with our friends and family through our TV?
So far, we've been examining this in terms of audience, content making, and distribution. But what about technologies that are on the horizon?
You know, it started with broadcasts, but then you can begin to look at people like Ralph Baer, who created some of the first television video game consoles. And that radically changed what a television could do. And that was just one of the first. You know, you have VCRs, DVDs, now you have these smart TVs. You have all these different things that are kind of changing the nature and changing what television is.
Johnson says that TV, as a technology, appears to be on a path toward device intelligence. It's the power of a computer mixed with TV.
We're going to be able to know more about what we're watching. So not just more just about the show we're watching, but what's going on inside the show. So who the actors are, where they are, maybe the products that they're picking up. So what we're beginning to see is that it's kind of like computer vision. So we're have a deep understanding of what's going on, even to a frame by frame level.
And once this data is sent to your intelligent devices, those devices will know who you are. They'll know what you want.
Around the year 2015, there'll be 500 billion hours of content available to people from the web. It's 500 billion hours. That's more content that's humanly knowable. So if you can use your devices and use the intelligence in those devices, they can actually just help you find something to watch. But not only do they help you find something to watch, they also can know what advertisements you're interested in. They can know what services you're interested in.
It's a complex task to try to predict the future of TV in this much detail. The common thread among these thinkers, however, is that it's more than just about the internet.
It can't be about everything converging in a magical black box, which is what I call the black box fallacy. It's in fact being part of a flow or circulation of media content that flows through many technologies, that uses many technical tools, that has multiple business models, and it moves back and forth between commercial and non-commercial players.
Trying to get all of these devices to other devices to talk intelligently to each other and allow us to really move around the pace of our lives as we do, yet still coming back to that central TV. We see the TV as being, which is really the fireplace of this millennia. You know, it's still that thing in that we have in the house that brings people together around it for specific events.
I think the challenge is to not screw it up.
Marcelino Ford-Levine works in Intel's Digital Home Group, and he's also the secretary of the Board of Governors for the Academy of Television.
Well, I think the future of TV, if we look at it as a device, as a technology, is very bright. I think we're probably in the bottom of the first inning of what's going to be a long, robust future for television as a as a viewing platform for just watching regular storytelling and content and media that we all know and love. But the ability for television as a display device to be able to provide a window to other things that we can do.
That's our show for today. Future Lab is the online radio series of Intel Labs. You can find some photos about today's show on Flickr. Just use the search terms Future Lab and Intel. You can find more episodes of Future Lab on iTunes and at connectedsocialmedia.com. Intel Labs can be found at intel.com/research.